The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening to the Town Hall Review podcast, where we bring you the best voices on the stories and issues that matter. Our podcast is brought to you through partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's a piece I hope you enjoy from my cigar-smoking friend, Dennis Prager.
One of the great themes that I have talked about is the decreasing amount of marriage in the United States, decreasing number of children born in the West. There are countries that are going out of business. Do you realize that? Within 100 years, I don't know if there will be what there will be in terms of a Germany or a Spain or a Belgium, as you write in my guest I'm looking at. I have a distinguished guest. I happen to know the man. So what do they call it when you have to give full disclosure? I like him. I don't know. What am I supposed to say? I know him, and I like him. But there are a lot of people I know and like who don't come on the show. By the way, there are even people I don't like who come on the show. But I wanted to mention that because he is a pediatrician in practice in Santa Monica, California, where nobody has babies. So now he's only seeing people from other parts of Southern California. Actually, I want to talk to you about Santa Monica. It'll be an interesting thing. Dr. Bob Hamilton, Robert Hamilton, MD, pediatrician for more than 30 years, founder of Pacific Ocean Pediatrics in Santa Monica. And you have gone on 30 medical missions. I didn't know that. 30. Wow. I know you go to Africa and Central America because I told you I wanted to go on one of them with you. We'll still work that out. I could broadcast from there. Was it Gabon, right?
The Gambia.
The Gambia. Oh, not Gabon. Okay.
No.
The Gambia.
The Gambia.
By the way, is it called the Gambia?
It's a funny thing. Like the Netherlands is called the Netherlands, and the Gambia is called the Gambia. There's a river called the Gambian River, but just Gambian River. But yes, it is the Gambia, which confuses the heck out of everybody.
Yeah, I'm one of them. Dr. Hamilton has written a book which has really gone, I'll bet you didn't expect it to be as popular as it is. It's really successful.
We're working on it, and it came out 3 months ago, actually, almost to the day.
And it's called Seven Secrets of the Newborn, Secrets and Happy Surprises of the First Year. And it's published by St. Martin's Press. And the reason I mention it, because a lot of people send me books they would like to come on, totally understandably, and I respect anyone who's written a book, whether they publish it themselves or they have an established publisher. But having an established publisher says to me that somebody thought it worthwhile to invest in this person's book. That's the difference between that and a self-published book. So I want all authors to understand why we have a sort of rule here that we have books published by actual publishers, because then we know it has met certain criteria. Anyway, Seven Secrets of the Newborn. You have a piece in the Los Angeles Times. God said, be fruitful and multiply. Robert C. Hamilton. This just came out September 12th. And the it is about your observations in comparing and contrasting Belgium and Israel in terms of fertility. Let's talk, before we get to the Seven Secrets of the Newborn, is that the title? Yeah, Seven Secrets of the Newborn, which is up at DennisPrager.com, by the way. The book is up at our website. To what do you attribute the decline in fertility in the West?
You know, there's a lot of factors, but I think that the when you think about what has gone on the last several years, I think we're beginning to lose our vision for life. Something happened after World War II during the 50s and 60s and 70s. Certainly the feminist revolution, if you will, was a part of that. But in terms of That idea of the 50s, we had the 50s, and moms were at home, and there was this idea that, life was kind of a wonderful time in American life in some ways. A lot of people turned around and said, we don't want that anymore. And I think that changed a lot of what happened with women, because women are the ones who bear children. And if you look at the studies, women who are going into careers, who are going to college, which, by the way, is a good thing. My wife and I have four children. They've all gone to college. And four daughters, six children, I should clarify. But our four daughters, we have all gone to college. But as a result of that, what is happening is that women are putting off that goal, which was really very evident when I was a kid, of having children. So that's a big part of it.
When you see patients, the ones having children in Santa Monica, California, I know well, not only being a resident of Southern California, but I conducted the Santa Monica Symphony Orchestra and got quite immersed in the political life of your city. So your city is known as quite left. And why I associate left with not having babies, in fact, not even getting married in many instances. Is that a fair stereotype?
Here's the thing. I deal with people who have children. So by definition, I'm dealing with a kind of a subpopulation of my community, Santa Monica.
Okay, good. So that in fact, raises the question I wanted to ask. Assuming that a fair number of the women whom you see who are having children are on the left, why are they having children?
I think that this concept of having children, this goal, this kind of lifetime hope, is resident in people in general, even whether you're on the left or the right. Definitely there are people who are real true ideologues who say we want no children. We don't want to populate the world anymore. And so they're not having children. They're relatively rare. But what I do find that residue of wanting a child is something which is deeply inherent to human beings. It's in our DNA. It really is in the genetic code. So people, even whether you're on the left or the right or whatever, they want children. However, what I find is that people who do tend toward more leftist ideology, and I don't know everybody in my office stands, they tend to have one, maybe two children. The concept of overpopulating, even though that is really wrong, as you mentioned in your opening statement here, we actually have a big issue in Western world right now with populations actually decreasing. But anyway, they rarely go beyond two. People who are more religious, people who have who tend to be a little bit on the writer's side of the spectrum, who I know that to be, they have larger families. And I think that to a degree, religion is a big part of it. We see that in Israel. Which is if you look at the piece I did for the Wall Street Journal there, the actual...
Oh, this is the Wall Street... I thought this was the L.A. Times.
No, that's the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, okay, fine. I was wondering why the L.A. Times would publish you. As soon as I saw the word God in the headline, I just assumed, what? The L.A. Times is publishing that? Or is it the Wall Street Journal? Okay.
I would love to be published in the L.A. Times, believe me. But anyway, if you look at that article and dissect it, it depends on how religious you are, how many children you actually bear. The conservative, what they call the Haredi population in Israel, are having 6.9 children per woman, which is an astronomical number, really.
And it's very hard to have 9/10 of a child. I mean, that's an achievement in and of itself. I'm speaking to Dr. Robert Hamilton. He's a pediatrician in Santa Monica. He's written this terrific book, Seven Secrets of the Newborn, Secrets and Happy Surprises of the First Year. You have a profession that I have to believe is one of the handful, and just I don't. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. I don't care. You know that. You've heard me speak, but it would seem to me you have one of the few professions that is fairly happy every day. Is that right?
That's very true. I tell people that in terms, if you have to go out and get a job, I've got the best job in the world. I get to get up in the morning and get to go to hospitals and look at babies who were born the night before. I pick them up. I hold them. I show them to their mom and dad. Their parents are ebullient. They're so delighted. And it's really a happy time of life. I mean, I remember back when we were having children. What a joy and what an incredible sense of hope and purpose you have when you have a child. So I'm dealing with young people who are in that phase of their life when they're having children. And I get to listen, I get to watch them grow up. I kind of shepherd them, if you will, through their early childhood years, and, you know, junior high, high school. I eventually have to kick them out of the practice when they get taller than me and bigger than me and are going to college. But I get to kind of go through that whole process with families, and it's a real tremendous joy.
Yeah, I remember my pediatrician bonded with my kids. I mean, it's a big deal. So when I speak to young people, it is apparent that an inversion of all of history has taken place. Children are now regarded by vast numbers of Americans as impediments to happiness.
That is very true. And it's true because they don't know. They've been told that children bring a lot of work. If you talk to any of my young parents, they'll tell you, yes, we're up all night. We do a lot. We have diapers. We have food. We have to change them. This and do that. We take them here and they get sick. There are a lot of things. But, you know, interestingly enough, Dennis, in preparation for this interview, yesterday I was having I was interviewing my patients. And I held up their child and said, what has this child brought to your life? And some of them, with tears in their eyes, said, number one was joy. Joy. Number two, just you know, laughter and happiness. Another guy said purpose. Another woman said everything. I'm not sure what she meant by everything, but everything. And so when you actually begin to have children, when they actually come into your life and you realize that, of course, their work. Of course, we all know that. But when you begin to realize the blessing and the joy and the delight and how children light up virtually every room that they walk into, they begin to kind of go, wow, we didn't know this. I've had women really, truly in their mid-30s have their first child, which is becoming more and more common. And they come into my office, and look, I talk to my patients. They know who I am and what I'm up to, and I get to know them. And I say, tell me about this. You're 35, and some of them literally look at me and say, why didn't anybody tell me? Why was I mistaken about children and the blessing and how much they change your life in a good way, in a good way? And children really do, they mature us. They take us out of ourselves, and if anything, and this is a good thing too, they bring us into the next generation. They thrust us by definition. We are, as a father, I'm concerned about, 20 years from now, what will be happening.
Yep, that's a very good point. You think in that way. Do you know young women who are opting not to have children, or that obviously they're not going to come to your practice, but do you know them at all in life?
I do. There are a couple of them. Some of them, sadly, have, you know, the way life has gone. They've been married, divorced, or whatever, and they've kind of gone beyond their years where they can have children, and they've come to that point where they said, I don't want children. Okay. Well, there aren't too many that I'm aware of that actively in their early 20s, mid-20s, unless some kind of terrible dysfunction has happened in the family, say, I never want to have children. I know they're out there because I read like you read, but I don't run into them very
often. Dr. Bob, I was with a woman. I announced this on the radio this week. I met a woman just recently at a certain get-together. So I frequently ask young women, in fact, I'll ask them, how old are you? So she turns out she was 34. And I asked her, are you married? No. And do you want to get married? And then she gave the answer that most troubles me. And that is, if somebody comes around, that'll be fine. But I'm preoccupied with my career, her career being acting. which is particularly dangerous because very few people ever make it in acting, just the nature of the beast, as it were. But the reason I'm telling you this is what really fascinated me is the woman goes to church every Sunday. And I asked on the air, maybe you're a churchgoer, so tell me, are Christian churches not advocating marriage? Is it an unspoken issue?
It was certainly in our church. We talk about marriage all the time. We have a lot of young people. We have a lot of children in our congregation. So in our congregation, no, we do talk about marriage. For whatever reason, though, there are plenty of congregations, and they can be conservative and more to more liberal in their theology, who are not really getting up there and saying we need to have children. We want
We even need to get married. Let's start with that.
Let's start with that. Yeah, exactly. It isn't happening. And I'll tell you what it is. It represents really we're acclimatizing ourselves to the culture. And that is happening in churches throughout the country. We kind of look at the culture as kind of leading the church rather than the church leading the culture.
Today, if you meet a woman who's 25, married and has a child, she is the outlier.
She would be the outlier.
Yes.
This is
brand new in American history.
It really is. And definitely in urban America. In rural America, it's still happening. It happens all the time. When I have those kind of people, by the way, I have a handful in my practice who are relatively young mothers. I look at them and I ask them, I say, where did you get your common sense? Because I want to know what is the motive, what is it about them?
That is a great question. Where did you get your common sense? and then they say, oh, listen to the Dennis Prager show. And he goes, really? Me too.
I listen to Pragertopia every night.
Yes. The book is done really well, and it could really touch your life. 7 Secrets of the Newborn, Secrets and Happy Surprises of the First Year. Give me a happy surprise. Tell me one. I've had 1-year-olds. What's a happy surprise?
Well, one great happy surprise I found as I researched the book was at the point of conception, there's a flash of light. And so when the ovum and the sperm actually unite, and it usually happens in the fallopian tube, there's actually an influx of calcium ions, okay, into that that zygote, and there is an exit of zinc ions, and that zinc exit causes there to be literally a spark. There's a little flash of light that happens.
That's not a surprise. Everybody listening knew that. Give me a break. Zinc ions. You know how often Sean mentions that? In fact, instead of saying, would you turn the light on? He said, just a little zinc ion, Dennis.
So, when you think about this, this has been going on, Dennis, for the millennium. And, I think about this. I think this is like a little thing that God has looked at and said, let there be light. Let there be life. And it kind of goes, it kind of like one of those things that you kind of go, wow, this has been going on forever. That flash of light, that kind of annunciation, if you will, of new life.
So let me ask you about the first year. How, I'm not asking a cliche question. I want to know the answer. How much of us is formed in the first year?
Well, that's a great question. I would say this. When you think about the first year of life, you think about a newborn baby, they're kind of this highly dependent little lump of humanness. Very sophisticated, by the way. You don't know it, but when you actually look at them every day, you realize that they're pretty together. And you think about a 1-year-old child. What are they doing? Well, a 1-year-old child is walking. They're intensely curious. They're beginning to babble. They're talking maybe a word or two, and they're relatively coordinated with their hands, or can actually feed themselves. And you think about the progression from that newborn infant who is just laying there, hardly able to lift up their head, and a 1-year-old child, it is an incredible, incredible year in terms of development. Now, brain-wise, what is happening in the brain is literally this electrical storm. The synapses are forming between the neurons. But by the way, we're born with about 100 billion neurons in our brain. That is equal to the stars in the Milky Way. This is an astounding number. And at points along the in utero development, we're making 250,000 neurons every minute. These are amazing, amazing numbers.
That is amazing.
Amazing numbers. And, I mean, you think about that we have to realize that zygote, we just talked about that uniting of the ovum and the sperm together, that zygote in 9 months is going to be a breathing, living little baby who's crying for food and suckling on the mother and, you know, pushing up. They have, you know, relatively good strength, even as a newborn.
What's your theory? At what age do they know that they are they and not an extension of their mother, let's say?
I think that's probably around 3 months of age.
Is that already?
It really is. I mean, I have this little... if you read my book, I actually say that 3 months is my favorite age. And people say, why is that? And it's just kind of, what about, 10 years of age, 11? 3 months. I'll tell you why. They're finally over that fussy period where they're going, they're groaning and moaning all the time. And I actually think, this is just me making this up, I think by 3 months of age, they've forgiven their mother for giving them birth.
Adorable. That is truly adorable.
I think they're rebelling for the first 3 months
right.
of their life.
That's my theory. The kid comes out of the womb. I didn't want to leave. I didn't ask to be conceived.
Right.
Once conceived, I didn't ask to be exited.
That's right. Yeah, it really is true. At about 3 months of age, they finally have decided that they're part of the human race, and they're willing to kind of go with it, and they become much more delightful. Mothers for their part are feeling a little bit better about themselves. They're beginning to get a little sleep and their weight is going down, a lot of factors. So anyway, that is my favorite age.
3 months. Well, if it's a pediatrician's favorite age, then it's a big deal. Dr. Robert Hamilton, his book is Seven Secrets of the Newborn, Secrets and Happy Surprises of the First Year. So we're talking about parents as well as kids here. So back to the parents. What's your take? And I know you want to be careful because obviously these are patients or might be patients. So without even referencing, and of course not referencing any of your patients, do you think it is legitimate to be concerned about what is called the helicopter parent?
This is a new phenomenon, and the helicopter parent, by definition, is that parent who is literally hovering over their child 24/7,
right?
Arranging their schedule, making sure they're getting to their French classes and their ballet and their soccer and their karate, and it goes on and on and on. And children don't have a break. And that is that's kind of a phenomenon of our wealth, of the fact that they can do that, number one. And also it's a function of the fact that the mothers don't have a lot of children. They have one child.
Maybe. Oh, what a great point. I hate it when I didn't think of a great point.
And I tell people, if you really want to get over your anxiety, have about 5 more children.
That's right,
and
course.
You don't have time to be anxious.
That is such... the moment you said it, I realized that. You can't be a helicopter over 5 kids.
I actually think...
you need 5 helicopters.
You're right. Anyway, so that's what I tell people. That, the helicopter phenomenon is you kind of have too much time on your hands.
I want to say for the record, my parents raised me as if they had 12 kids. My parents were helicopter parents in the sense that the helicopter was always being repaired.
And I
thank God for it.
Thank God for that.
Yes,
absolutely.
I learned to be independent.
Yes, that's exactly right.
You have a thing in here about strangers. I just want to say, my first son, I was the director of a retreat center. So 1,000 people would come up on the weekends. So my son was touched in his first year by about 1,000 people. I mean that sincerely.
Wow.
Never
yeah.
got sick. Wow. He probably developed antibodies.
He did.
I mean, and what does he do now? He's a professional fundraiser because he deals so well with people. That people hide kids from strangers or tell them, oh, don't talk to strangers. It is hurting the child. I mean, I'm editorializing. You're the doctor. Go ahead.
Well, if you're referring to stranger anxiety, I mean, there, you know, young children love people. They really do. But there is a funny thing that happens when children, the second half of their first year, they have this thing called stranger anxiety. So people who are not their mom and their dad or people very close to them, they have a reaction to them, which is usually crying and screaming and wanting to get away from them. And this is kind of embarrassing for the parents because they go, oh, he's such a good baby. But, you know, every time grandma, who's from Florida, shows up, he has a complete fit when grandma tries to hold him, which is embarrassing for the family. And, of course, grandma feels kind of bad about that, too.
I just want to say, from the Prager family lore, you will like this. This is, you just reminded me. I don't think I ever mentioned this on the radio. There would have never been a reason to. My older brother, almost 6 years older than I, so this precedes my birth. But it is said that whenever our beloved Aunt Buddy came, he threw up. I can't tell you how sad I felt for Aunt Buddy hearing this. This is what you just said.
Yeah, no, they literally have almost a out-of-body experience.
Yeah,
you know? And they're terrified, they're screaming, and they do not want to be held by Aunt Bonnie.
Right. To show you how weird I am, I preferred strangers. I had family anxiety. I loved strangers. What you must see in the course of what you could, it's very funny. I was going to say, you could write a book. And I realized, by golly, he did. Seven Secrets of the New. Why did you title it Secrets?
I think that people are, I mean, look, I'm trying to sell books, Dennis. And so I think that people are intrigued by the word secret. They kind of go, well, what could it be? You know, and they'll be apt to pick up this book.
Oh, I see.
So it's a marketing technique.
So it's really insights, seven insights.
Okay, you can put it that way. You won't sell any books, but you can put it that way.
Right. No. I'm simply defining it for the audience. What it really is seven insights.
You're correct in this.
Yeah.
You're correct.
No, I think that's great.
I'll change the title.
No, don't change the title. I think it's a great title, but I love your honesty. It just is better. You know, I agree with you. We all know the importance of titles. I think we have a former patient of yours here who's now a 42-year-old man. What is the largest family that I would think in Santa Monica it's pretty rare to have more than two. So have you had anything more than six?
We have. I've had one, and this is in my entire career, of nine.
That was it.
And
once, yeah.
Now, mind you, this they were dear friends of ours, actually, become dear friends over time because people who have six children don't have any friends other than people who have, you know, six or more people because nobody wants to invite them to their home. But anyway, they were a family. They began with three. They had triplets right out of the gate. Boom. And
wait,
so
were they on some fertility medicine?
No, this was
that's amazing.
Just
a natural three.
So this family had three. So they were kind of ahead of everybody right from the very beginning,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
And then they had a set of twins. And then they had, then you're up to five. Then they had four of the singletons. All of them amazing young kids. But that was, that's pretty rare. I have another, our pastor has eight children. And I have a couple other family friends who have seven, six. But look, the majority of people in Santa Monica, like I say, have like two.
Yes, I would understand.
Yeah.
Anyway, folks, the book, Seven Secrets of the Newborn, it is up at DennisPrager.com. More power to you, Robert Hamilton. You deserve a great deal of success with the book. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you for listening to the Town Hall Review. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership program offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy your podcast, take a moment, tell a friend to subscribe today.
three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.